Welcome, listeners, to a pandemic podcast. We are recording from the province of New Brunswick, but our focus is going to be on a number of different provinces and across the country and various countries. But we will be also talking about what we see in our own backyards as well. And my name is Cheryl. You can find me on Twitter at Tin Can Fire. I am a teacher. I'm also an artist and a parent. And I also live with medical vulnerabilities. So I've been following the pandemic closely since we first started hearing about it in 2019. And as I've seen things become heightened in government responses in 2020 and then 2021, and now in 2022, we have completely no government responses, I was thinking that it would be the perfect time for a podcast to discuss what we're seeing and where we go from here. And we're going to be having different folks that we're going to be talking with. Some of these folks we'll see often. Some of them will be recurring guests. And I know that all of the listeners are going to be in for a real treat. So without further ado, Chris, let's hear some stuff about yourself.
Sure. I'm Chris. You can get me at Hallway Orchard on Twitter. I am an engineer, a ne'er-do-well, a grumpy person. And I've been following the pandemic very closely since really before it landed on Canadian shores. Witnessing this thing is very unique in my lifetime. And when it came and did get here, the response was something that was also very unique. I think for a lot of us, it bolstered the idea that in tragic or chaotic times, we would see a communal response, something that valued the well-being of the population over everything else. And I think that is what we saw. I think the pandemic hit every place on the planet so fast and so hard that we were shocked into this position of social welfare, which went counter to what cynics often, like myself, often would accuse the state of having in their sort of disregard for public welfare. But over the course of the pandemic, throughout our country, other countries, we saw that shift from an interest in protecting people to an interest in protecting the status quo. And that has been something that has been not unexpected, but also very disappointing in sort of a soul-crushing way to see that we really don't have the stamina as a culture and as a country to continue that kind of interest in the well-being of the people who live here. Now, that's not to say that there aren't large groups of people who are concerned for that stuff. Of course, the group that we interact with most frequently, PopNB, is a group of people who I think feel similarly and want to uphold and maintain that continued concern, continued protection, continued interest in making sure that well-being isn't something that's just sort of earmarked for those who can pay for it, but for everybody.
Perfect. I'm nodding in agreement. And for listeners, PopNB is Protect Our Province, New Brunswick. And there's a number of different POP groups throughout the country. There's a POP Alberta, POP Nova Scotia, POP British Columbia, and a variety of different ones as well. Mm-hmm. And then for today, we also have Kay joining us.
Hi, yes, I am.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay.
I was also nodding and in agreement while listening to Chris, which is, you are so reliable for bringing things back to the big picture. And I find that really helpful. Yeah. So I'm Kay and I run the PopNB Twitter account, which you can find on Twitter at popnb_kindness, popnb_kindness. Our first thing that we ever did as a group was a little demonstration in front of a couple of the hospitals in New Brunswick on the same weekend that there was a pro-COVID demonstration in Fredericton, basically the Fredericton attempt at a convoy thing. So we organized a few people that really, really strongly felt like they wanted to show that, you know, not everybody's about that. And they wanted healthcare workers to know that they were appreciated. So a little group of us really quickly organized something in St. John and in Miramichi, where we held up some signs and gave encouragement to the people that were working in the hospitals that weekend, which was like really appreciated. We had some messages from people saying like they get a lot of verbal abuse and, you know, threatening, aggressive interactions. And just to see that people out in the public still appreciated them was so meaningful. And that was quite significant to hear that, because it was truly the least we could do. Like, we just stood outside with some signs for the most part. It was such a small gesture. And yet to see that the people who were risking their health and putting up with some really challenging working conditions, you know, that was a significant gesture to them, which was, it was nice to hear that, but it was also really upsetting, because it's like, okay, well, we should as a society be doing so much more for all of you people that are doing this work. And so, and then not so long after that, New Brunswick removed all its protections, which was really heartbreaking, because basically they were trying to see how many people they could put in the hospital. Right? They were no longer trying to reduce the number of people who needed medical care. They were trying to see how bad would it get? You know, how close to normal can we get while also pushing everyone in healthcare to the very edge? And it was like the healthcare workers were subsidizing the rest of the industries. Like, okay, people could do dining in and have no restrictions on events and in-person stuff and parties and all that. But it's like, okay, at the same time, you're completely overwhelming the hospital system. So it's been a really rocky year in New Brunswick. And we've kind of just come together as a group through all of the different things that have happened. And we've got people that work in all kinds of different industries, people who work in retail, people who work in food service, people who work in healthcare, people who work in education. And it's been really incredible to share the knowledge resources that we have and share our experiences. And I think that we have all created just some really valuable stuff in terms of the resources that we've created to help people, guiding them to good sources of information. And just also the relationships and the networks that we've established and the, you know, some of the supports and the mutual aid that's been going on. So It's been a really, this sounds kind of sappy, but it's been a beautiful experience for me. This is, you know, I've met some really caring and amazing people, but it's also been completely shocking. Just the, how easy it looks like it's been for our institutions to create dangerous environments for everybody and not seem to express any regret or remorse for it. It's been really shocking. It's been wow. So I was thinking today when I was driving and I was thinking about, you know, this will end up coming up in the future for us, but our group right now is reviewing a right to information request where we're seeing that many, many, many people in government have had access to and have known a lot of factual, high quality information about how prevalent long COVID is and how the various ways it presents, the effects that it has on individuals, the effects that has on our whole province and on our nation. And yet our government in New Brunswick has communicated none of that onwards to the public. And just reviewing that information like we have been over the last 24 hours, I'm like, why are they doing this? Like, they're going to completely reduce everybody's trust in government. And why would a government want to do that while at the same time concentrating power the way that we've seen the Higgs government do in New Brunswick with dismissing the hospital boards and getting rid of the district education councils? Like, the government is simultaneously gathering more power and yet completely eliminating our trust in the government. And the only thing that I could come up with that made sense to me while I was thinking about this and doing an errand was, they don't plan to need our trust in the future. They don't care. They mustn't be planning to provide any services or any things that would require the public's trust the way that public health did prior to this, right? Public health needed us to trust them. That's how they got so many people wearing masks. That's how they got so many people vaccinated so quickly the first go around, right? With the primary series. They needed our trust. And if they're this willing to both like concentrate the power and obliterate the public's trust, they mustn't care for it at all. There's got to be other motivations behind seeking power, because it certainly doesn't seem to be to help the public, which it's just been extremely heavy to realize that and to try to come to terms with, like, okay, now how do we go about mobilizing a very jaded and, you know, just a very disengaged population? How do we go about motivating them? Because it's been revealed that the systems that we think we're participating in are not the systems that we are actually participating in. That is not a good introduction to myself at all, but that was what I was thinking about today.
I think it's probably suitable that we're saying, hi, my name is, and this is how dour I am. That's the tone I think we've struck for this. And
it's not appropriate, isn't it? Exactly. Yes. So I'm also a parent, and I like the both of you, I also had an interest in this stuff before that it really became what it is currently in New Brunswick. I've been paying pretty close attention. I think there were fewer than 700 reported cases in the world when I was like, really like, okay, this is something that I need to sort of pay attention to. Mm-hmm. And the physician that had blown the whistle in China, he was still alive. Like, I remember him passing away while I was, you know, like starting to pay attention to all this. So it's been I think it's helpful that we've all had a really longitudinal interest in this pandemic. And, you know, I think we probably have had interest in other phenomenons and, you know, mass movements and that kind of thing in the past too. So yeah. And I'm a lifelong New Brunswicker, you know, and that's part of what I think makes all of this really difficult to contend with, is feeling like, wow, my family is here, my upbringing is here. And every province is, of course, doing some awful things, but New Brunswick just seems to like take it that extra step. And how do I feel as somebody that's choosing to reside in this province? And, you know, like, you know, it brings up a lot of questions and a lot of angst and regret and sadness too, I think. But that's enough out of me on that.
No, but I think that's where there's so many people feeling the same way. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring us all together and create this podcast, is because I know that there's so many people who will be listening to these words and nodding in agreement, just like I was when I was listening, because there's so many people who are seeing these same things, be it if they're living in New Brunswick or Ontario or Alberta or in different countries or different continents. We are seeing this across Western nations, and we are seeing the failing of our public institutions to protect not only our most vulnerable citizens, but all citizens. And as Kay pointed out, we're also digging through information. And right now we're learning as Pop New Brunswick that our public health institution knew about the effects of long COVID and the seriousness of ongoing symptoms since 2020, and they have not been expressing this to the public. So there's layers and layers of problems. And I think the best thing to do is to talk about it, to shine a light on it, to normalize these conversations.
Yeah.
I remember seeing there was a post talking about the Spanish flu, like quote unquote Spanish flu in 1918 or the 1920s, and how there's so little media that talked about it then. And they coined the term the great forgetting. And I think it's so important that we don't forget this and we keep talking about it, despite what so many organizations and institutions and businesses are actively encouraging us to do.
I'm a big believer too in like both of you touched on that concept of putting this stuff forward, the things that are rattling around in our heads every hour of every day, the things that we discuss in our little group chats, to put those things out in a broader way, I think is important for people, because we've all had that singular experience where we were thinking these things and then one day we stumble across one, two, a dozen other people who are echoing those same concerns. And it's so grounding to understand that you're not alone in that, that other people are seeing it, other people are justifiably concerned about it. And everywhere out there, someone is experiencing the first time feeling a communal grief at what they're seeing in and around them. We've seen that so many times within our group. It's a nice idea to know that that might be going out and finding some other people on another platform, and letting them know that they're not alone.
Oh, see, there's the hope, right? Like it's such a difficult time to navigate, but there's also the opportunity there too. And that's the positive in all this. So we've talked about who we are, kind of some of the things that we've done. And then something I wanted to cover in this first episode as well is different topics that we'll be covering in the future. So I know we kind of touched upon rights to information. And maybe, Chris, you could expand a little more on that, because I know you've been leading the way in that research area.
Yeah, we have put in quite a few right to information requests. We've received a lot of responses back, some very damning responses. They were a subject of multiple stories in media, both CBC, Telegraph Journal covered one as well. Most explosively, I guess, we uncovered that despite our Chief Medical Officer of Health, Jennifer Russell's claims during the lead up to the removal of mandated protections, that the decision to remove those mandated protections was based on published science. When it came time to provide copies of that documentation to the child and youth advocate, Kelly Lamrock, she was not in possession of any of it and went searching for it in her immediate professional circle to try to find evidence to back up her decision. That was quite a bombshell that we uncovered. Another one was when we asked for, similarly, we asked for documentation or studies, you know, that kind of thing, that which led to the criteria for lifting the mandates. We were provided with one document, which was a far right think tank piece done by economists who had ties to big oil, who had ties to the Koch brothers in the United States, basically science for hire type of outfit, who claimed that the non-pharmaceutical interventions had no effect on COVID death rates. Of course, that's been disproven time and time again. It's bunk science, but the idea that when given the opportunity, the Office of Public Health and Department of Health provided that one example of what they were basing their decisions on, pretty sickening to see. We've had several since, and we've put much of the stuff that we have had, we've made it public. A lot of provinces in Canada actually make public the responses to right to information requests, and they have them on a central website. New Brunswick doesn't do that. So we've actually published ours on our website. When anybody can go and see that, it's at protectnb.ca. They can check that out, check out what we've had. And as Kay mentioned a little while ago, we are right in the middle right now of, as we speak, of processing a very large response, over 700 pages, regarding discussions of long-term effects of COVID. And the real takeaway that we have immediately is that as early as 3 months into the pandemic, so we're talking like June 2020, there was a great deal of information being circulated within the Department of Health in New Brunswick, talking about the very likely long-term impacts of sustaining even a mild COVID infection. And as we all know, or many of us know, none of that has ever been communicated to the public of New Brunswick.
Yeah. It's absolutely, it's good to see the information that's coming out, because, you know, learning things and finding this out is always good, but at the same time, it's so heavy, and seeing these truths, it's a lot to process for me. And I think for a lot of folks working on this too. Yeah. Kate, did you want to add a couple words before we wrap up?
Yeah, no, that was so well explained, Chris. You know, some of what we found through the right to information requests and the significance of those findings. It is really a horrible feeling when you review these emails and you see that many people, like dozens of them in the government, are regularly emailing each other. You know, facts are coming up. Actually, some good sources of information are being shared. Some horrific sources of misinformation and disinformation are also being shared, and sometimes they're shared and you don't see a single shred of critical appraisal. You know, nobody writes a reply all saying like, oh, you know, thanks for finding that, but by the way, you know, you might want to consider X, Y, Z, right? Like there's nothing critical said. Basically, in one of the right to information requests, there was like a chain email was shared talking about like it was almost the COVID equivalent of like, go and live in this city before the country makes you soft, and go and live in the country before the city makes you hard. You remember like basically that one that was talking about like, wash your hands, but don't. Anyway, it was so bad. It was a chain. It was a grandma style, you know, 1990s chain email. And it was being shared as if it was like legitimate pandemic information. And, you know, you see this stuff shared and you don't see anybody follow it up with like a, all right, you know, any critique, right? And that's what's really challenging. And so my background is as an information professional, and my professional experience and my training and qualifications is all around critical appraisal and finding and sharing legitimate sources of health information, which has of course been, you know, an issue prior to the pandemic. Vaccination is a huge topic that ends up with the public receiving misinformation, disinformation, but there's all kinds of other topics as well, where people are either looking to make money, they stand to profit, or, you know, this kind of like common sense approach to things like, oh, that makes sense. But truly the evidence doesn't back it up. You know, there health information and disinformation and myths, it's something that we've all been dealing with for a really long time, but the pandemic made it like incredibly relevant to everybody. And it's particularly shocking when you see people in really positions of huge responsibility and power, and particularly like clinical, medical, health, government positions, and they don't seem to be able to discern appropriate sources of information. It's really shocking to me, because like that's my background, and it was just a 2-year program. Like if you are going to be responsible for the health of our whole province, your ability to find accurate information and reduce your biases while looking for the best information, it should be as good as mine. Or if it's not, you should be reaching out to the appropriate professionals, because New Brunswick has those professionals. There's no excuse for cherry picking data when it's something as serious as the health of our entire population and the future health of our children. That's not a time when you can go to your biased sources, you know, it's not like you're looking for the right answer for some advice about a dating situation or which car you're going to buy. You're looking for the information to base your decisions on that affects the health of every single person. And many people in New Brunswick don't have that agency. That's the part that really disturbs me, is when you're dealing with things like residents in long-term care, they cannot just, first of all, they can't easily do a risk assessment of their situation and they can't leave. And same with kids in school, same with patients in a hospital, same with, you know, some of our most vulnerable people who have like the least resources and the least agency. So that's the stuff that really bothers me. And as you guys were mentioning, some of the stuff that you have found to be like difficult to process and difficult to kind of square away with our understanding of the world that we used to have. One of those moments for me was seeing people in the Department of Health advocate against N95s in January 2022. There were people, there was a town hall meeting between the Department of Health and the New Brunswick Medical Society. And people within the New Brunswick Medical Society were bringing up questions of like, okay, what about access to respirators? What about access to N95s? And the response from the Department of Health was, well, they, you know, this is the advice that's coming from your infection control colleagues. And are you questioning your colleagues? You know, it was really not in good faith, considering that there are things called surgical respirators, which combine the protection afforded by a surgical mask for spray-borne liquid stuff and the protection that a respirator provides against airborne, aerosolized hazards. You can get the best of both worlds in a surgical respirator. And that wasn't even brought up. They just kept trying to basically promote the safety of the surgical mask over the safety of a respirator, which in January 2022, that's counter to the evidence that everybody should have access to. So that was like really shocking and disappointing to see that. That was a really low moment for me. So I think it's really hard when we see people in positions of power and responsibility in our institutions that are going against the really good evidence that is not that difficult to find. It just doesn't make sense because it ends up putting so many of us in danger and raising the hazard levels all around us. And that's not what we want out of our government. So it's been a really awful time from that perspective. So I think that that's a good place for me to end personally for today on that kind of a topic of just dishonest sharing of information and withholding of really clear evidence that would protect so many more people. And that's really upsetting to me and it's wrong. And it should be upsetting to everybody is my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. It really speaks to, and I think we've been talking to each other about this for quite some time, that question of why, given their access to information, given the content of that information, why do they continue to make those decisions? And it really, as I rack my brain over it, I keep coming back to that concept of that there's a reason for this kind of soft denialism and nudging of people toward, abandoning their own best interests. And that's probably something we can go over in at another time, but it reinforces my cynicism with respect to the powers that be.
Wow. What an amazing conversation. And I think for listeners out there, this is just kind of a sneak preview of what you'll be hearing from a pandemic podcast. And we're going to keep talking about this. We're not going to be hiding anything that's happening. And as you can tell from the guests today, we all care about this from our backgrounds, from the people that we are. And we'll also be having different people coming on from a variety of different backgrounds, maybe from psychological backgrounds, from medical backgrounds, from a variety of different places. Because as we know, no matter what your profession is, everyone is impacted by this that's happening. So thank you. Thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to future episodes. Thank you.